You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, Jay Cutler. Started a new podcast called Uncut with Jay Cutler. Most of you know me from the NFL, some of you have seen me on Instagram, and some of you know me from the reality TV world. Each week I'm taking you along with me as we discuss football, turning topics, and whatever's going on in my life each week. I'm bringing along people that are special in my life. Former teammates, friends, and some new people that I like and respect. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Podcasting? I think I'm doing this right. Can't wait to get started with you. Go subscribe now. Uncut with Jay Cutler. Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify. Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Real GM Radio. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. This is the return of one of the oldest Real GM Radio traditions, over-unders with Arturo Galletti, Sports Grid Data Science, and as usual, it is a sufficiently long podcast that we need to split it into two. Each section will be about 2 hours as a podcast, and we're going to start with the Eastern Conference. A lot of really interesting discussions, some real disagreements here, and two notes before we get started. One, this is an unusual podcast that has timestamps. Timestamps are a pain for me to do because you have to, how you edit the episode is very different and how you put things together. But for these, it's important enough to make that happen. And then the other one is there was a fan on in the background, during the recording. I tried to get it out with a noise reducer. I actually went really aggressive on it, the most I ever have. So it's possible some words are missed. Basically, I went really hard after it. If you have problems on that end of it, please let me know, DM, email. I'll say my email, of course, at the end, like I always do. And I'll release a different version of it. But when I listened to different sections of it, I thought it sounded best this way. So that's why I did it. So that's enough of a preamble. Now we can get to Arturo, and it's so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Pleasure to be on, Danny.
And anything you want to walk through with listeners before we get into this? Any like kind of stats we're going to mention or anything that you think provide a little bit of that having a little background would be useful?
Yes, I think that same as last year, we're going to use Darko. That's cost estimate, Model F, K-Medev. It's a really nice model. I like it. I generally use a combination of that and my own statistical model. The part I like about Kostas' model is it's got the regression built in and it accounts for on-off performance on the court. So to use a random player as an example, very random, DeMar DeRozan. Darko does not like DeMar DeRozan because Darko sees that DeMar DeRozan's teams tend to always play better when he's not on the court, right? So that is indicative of there's something that he does that affects kind of the performance of his team beyond the baseline stats that he contributes, right? So, because, I mean, this is a team sport and there are other aspects other than like the statistical kind of box score. Well, you know, sometimes the player can be a structure that's kind of what shows up. And then we'll talk a little bit kind of like as we go along, and I was mentioning this to Danny, we added a little bit of like historical records. Now there's data going back 19 years and over-unders. So we have that. So we'll mention like that some teams are very public. And when I say it's very public, that means generally the books are going to set the line high because they know that fans will come in higher than that number, which means the advantage is to go low, go under. And there are teams that are the opposite of public and generally are underbet and underpriced, like, for example, the mountain teams in Denver and Utah, which generally Denver and Utah do very well on overs because people don't really mentally account for the fact that they play at a mile high. And there's other little things, like there's other little teams that are like that. We'll mention things about teams with a lot of rookies. I think that's kind of important because generally performance on rookies means the floor on your team is much lower. You don't know how bad a rookie's going to be. Hello, James Wiseman. And I think that the other thing that we'll mention, although I think the effect on this is a little muted, but you can disagree with me on this, which is like future drafts, right? Does the team own, like, if we're getting on in a twitchy situation, is there a likelihood that this team will not play as hard close to the end of the season? I do think the draft rules that they changed about 2 years ago have really kind of impacted.
They have, yeah.
Teams really don't have the incentive to tank as hard as they used to. So I think the other thing that's actually like been really good is the play-in. So I do think tweaks they've made to the rules make checking like the draft order, like whether or not they're on the draft picks, less impactful than it used to be. I think the thing that is kind of impactful is that teams will do the Oklahoma, what Oklahoma City did last year, which is like they're just turned over the team to a bunch of young guys because they want to see which of these, you know, they turn over, they get a lot of draft picks, and want to see which of these young guys actually can play, right? So you're more concerned about reps than actually like winning the game. And in those cases, well, you know, that team's going to kind of underperform because really they're treating it as more of a scrimmage than an actual game, right? But I think we'll cover that as we go along. As I mentioned, we'll talk about Dark Horse, the model we're going to be using, plus our picks. We'll talk about for each team, we'll have a overline and an underline. What that means is sometimes books will, like one book will set a higher over or like a lower under, right? So you always want to take like for over, you want to take the lowest over. For under, you want to take the highest under, right? It's free wins. Right? So you basically want to take that free margin. And then we'll either talk about, for each one of these teams, we'll make a call whether we want over under and whether we're going to play or fade it, right? So like in some cases, we'll look at it and go like, well, I think this team is going to go over, but I wouldn't touch with a 10th pole. I can think of a couple situations, Toronto, where I think we're going to have a bit of a confusion as to what the final look of the team is going to be like, you know, in December. And I think that's important as we go along. Anything you want to mention, Dave?
Well, so I'll mention that we're shifting back from a 72-game season to an 82-game season.
Yes.
And so that'll lead to some crossover stuff. But I believe the last year wins that we're going to be using is translated into 82 games.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's kind of important for that is also that, like 80-90% of last year was played with no home court.
Yes.
Which made for some really weird, like, basically, margins were basically the same across whether you're playing at home and on the road. And really kind of what really happened, like, so you had all these blowouts for home teams getting blown out at home, and it's because of the lack of that. I think that actually is going to help. There's some teams that are going to be helped by this. Again, mountain team. Teams with good home court. And there is really some very interesting scheduling effects that are going to come into play. Like the Atlantic. The Atlantic is going to be a big deal this year. Like in the sense that like anybody who's playing an Atlantic schedule is getting a significant penalty against the rest of them, right?
Yeah, because even though you don't play that much more against your own division, if every team in your own division is good, then it makes it more difficult. Because, you know,
yeah.
It's a challenge. The other thing that I'll mention a lot, there are a couple different stats that I find particularly interesting. So one is I like to use Clean the Glasses net rating because that is that filters out garbage time, which is less predictive than you know, so if you add it in. And so sometimes I'll talk about like the expected 82 game wins the prior year. So like a team that really changes it, like the Oklahoma City Thunder are an extreme example of this, or on one end of it, and then I think the Raptors are an extreme on the other end of it, of like whether you, because sometimes how many wins you had is useful, but how many wins you should have had, you know, because generally clutch performance balances over the years. So that's something I look at. And then another one that I've become really interested in is opponent three-point shooting percentage. And so the reason there is because generally teams can control the volume of opponent threes, but they have much less control over whether they actually go in or not. So if a team is on the extreme one year or the other, then that will change how their offense and mostly their defense look for that year. So like, for example, Knicks opponents couldn't make a three to save their lives last year, made the Knicks defense as good as it was anyway, made it look better. Whereas Minnesota, Milwaukee actually gave up, Milwaukee particular gave up a ton of threes, and teams made them, which is not necessarily predictive.
This is an ongoing argument for me, I think, because I do think that, so there is a way for you to control, or at least impact, a three-point shooting in the sense that, like, I mean, if you're willing to press up to the line, which we see a lot in the playoffs with better teams, then you're surrendering like mid-range shots and stuff going to the basket. But if you're aggressive on that in the short term during the season, teams typically don't adjust for it, so like you can actually see it. So like basically, what I'm saying is like if you're the Knicks and you're sitting on the line more often, like willing to like bump there. With the, when they're standing, the teams are not smart enough to adjust to that in the short term. There is some effect you can have on that over a regular season. It gets really dicey when you get into the playoffs. It's kind of one of these mirage effects. So like, if you have a series, the team will adjust to it within the first game, right? So that's kind of, where I say there, I mean, there's a little bit. It is an interesting kind of, dichotomy. It's, I think at this point, most teams, their performance, is basically kind of adjusted, to the, you know, I mean, I think that both teams basically offensively go to the same kind of offensive philosophy now that they, you know, a couple years back it wasn't the case. The Rockets, for example, were taking many more threes than everybody else, but like, I think at this point the league is basically caught up.
Yeah, it's balanced out a little bit more. So yeah, I think that's an interesting little thing to kind of consider. So as is tradition for us, we start with the Eastern Conference and we go bottom to top in each conference. And we do it not in terms of how many games the teams won last year in the 2020/21 season, but in terms of the over-unders that we are talking about for the coming season. And that's a better way to do it because obviously there are teams that have shifted dramatically in one direction or the other. Maybe that's because of personnel or something else. So that means that we start with the Orlando Magic. The Magic, if you translate it, they won roughly 24 games last year. They continued the youth movement of sorts where they, you know, continued to move some of their guys. But also remember last year, they had a lot of their vets for the first half of the year. Fournier missed time, but they had him, they had Vooch, you know, for a portion of last year. They had Aaron Gordon for a portion of last year. So if you want to go over on the Magic, you're saying they're going to win 22 or more games. And if you're going under on the Magic, you're saying they're going to win 23 or fewer.
Did the Magic change their coach?
Yes, they did. Steve Clifford is gone. Jamal Mosley is in.
Yeah, it's a weird situation for Orlando. I mean, I kind of like Clifford. I mean, I think he got a fair shake. I think the problem was, I mean, one, they blew it up. Two, they had a bunch of injuries, right? So even now, I mean, Isaacs is probably their best guy, but how much of Isaacs are they going to get this year, right? So it's kind of like, and then, you know, you've got Fultz is also hurt, and you've got a bunch of guys. So really, it is kind of a roster that, you know, it's a bit of a mixed bag. A lot of rookie numbers on this one. I mean, I see the argument for the under. Weirdly, the East is tough this year. And when I say weirdly, historically the East is not, there's reasons for it, but it's not as tough as the West. And this year is not the case. This year, like, the East is very top heavy, plus that, I mean, that conference in itself isn't that rough, but they really are the West team, the worst team in the Southeast, right? And, you know, for betting the under, we're talking about, what, 23.5, which is a little under what they did last year. Book is gone. Gordon is gone. No Fournier. Like, basically, we, you know, part of the minute for, like, you know, partial minutes for Isaacs. We don't know what Fultz is going to be. I mean, I think the new coach, I mean, I think they're going to play hard, but I think it's ultimately under.
I think it's an under as well. And for me, so this is, you know, a 23 wins is, that's tough for, you know, that's a pretty low bar. For example, even if you use the expected 82 wins for last year's stats, including the glasses version where you do that, that would be, they'd be one of the four worst teams in the league. And,
but they're worse than last year. Their best players, I mean, they don't have, again, no Vuk, no Gordon, no, like.
Well, and not only that, but the other part of it that's huge for them is the, you know, I think a lot about the organizational move, and it's like, so are they going to try to push? And I don't think they are. I think it's more important to see what they can get from Jalen Suggs, to see what they can get from all of their different kind of young guys. And also some of the other vets that are on this team could be gone. We'll see what happens with Terrence Ross and some of the other stuff. So I'm an under, so like, I think there's an argument for the under fade, because this is a lot of games to lose, is one way to put it. Like, it's a low bar to cross, but I'm gonna be an underplay just because I think everything's pulling in the same direction, and I also think that their talent might actually get worse from here, and even though some of them might have bright futures, they don't necessarily have the brightest presence.
Man, this is such a turnaround, because you're under, I mean, this team tends to go under historically too, so it's probably not a bad one.
Yeah, and Clifford, part of why I liked him, I mean, why I think he's a good coach, is that he raises the defensive floor of teams. And Mosley, I mean, we don't know what he is as a head coach, because he hasn't been a head coach. He's been an assistant and a pretty well-regarded one, but like, is he going to raise the floor of this defense like they have? And you brought up Isaac, like Isaac and Fultz, how much are they actually going to play? And my theory is that Mosley and the front office are going to be extremely cautious with those guys, both coming off significant injuries.
Maybe they just take the year off functionally?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily that extreme, but the idea that if they're going to miss two games, they'll actually miss three. You know, like that sort of an idea where you get an extra. And so for the Magic, they're deep in terms of like potential players, but they're not deep in terms of like functional like depth. So yeah, I'm underplay. I'm not.
They own all their picks, basically, too.
Yeah, they do. And so I think that it's not an easy play call. This is actually, I would say, one of the harder ones for me on the board in terms of that. But like,
To be perfectly honest, I would rather, instead of doing play, I would rather go under fade and then think about maybe taking Suggs Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. So Suggs Rookie of the Year odds. Can you translate this to me? So if it's
+750.
Okay, +750. So that means that's not bad.
I'm looking at going like, what's more fun? I mean, if I'm going on the under, basically I'm assuming that like this team is just like the only guy who's getting like real run and who's like doing everything for this team is going to be Suggs.
Well, and generally speaking, Rookie of the Year, because remember we're predicting who's going to win it, not who's going to deserve it, is about counting stats. And Jalen Suggs is probably going to have a green light. Now, I think Jalen Green is going to have a greener light just because of where Houston is and his role within the offense. But
Houston has a bunch of guys, they have a bunch of mouths.
Yeah, they do. And Orlando, like, they have some of their guys are more defensive players than offensive, like Isaac. Like, Isaac's a good player, but you're not going to, like, feed him in the same way that you are some other guys. So, yeah, I think if you're a Magic optimist, I would rather bet Suggs at +750.
I'm a magic pessimist, is what I'm saying. Like if you're betting I'm going under fade, but I'm saying like rather than like play the under, I would rather play Suggs at +750 to win Rookie of the Year because he's clearly the man. He's basically clearly the man in a garbage time scenario, right? So he's like he's the clear number one for this team, and this team is just gonna be full of garbage time, right? And we'll talk about like the class. I mean, this class is interesting because I'm looking for someone. This doesn't really have a LaMelo kind of deal like it did last year. Where, like you're like, yeah, you know, people who do, we knew that LaMelo was going to be kind of good. But I think that in this particular scenario, you need somebody who is a counting stats. And I think Suggs 750 is interesting and good.
Yeah,
Suggs 750 is more fun than betting better than taking the under because. It's the Southeast. I could totally see them winning. Like, I could totally see them winning 25 games in the Southeast, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's where I'm at on the other. Like, even though they're a mess, like, there's enough of a mess around them that I think they could probably stumble into 25 points.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so I think we can jump to the Detroit Pistons. So the Pistons last year, they won about 23 games if we adjusted to 82 games. But one of the big stories, this is why I use Cleaning Glass Net Rating, is that they really underperformed their point differential. They actually, like, they had the point differential of a 29 win team. And so, like, they were way worse than that. And in terms of, like, health and injuries, Jeremy Grant missed some time, Plumlee missed some time, the thing that weighs against it the other way is they're going to be playing not only just rookies, but they're going to be playing young guys a whole lot. Because if you add in Killian Hayes, who I think is going to get significant minutes, of course, Cade Cunningham. So
they're at 14% of their minutes are going to go to rookies right now for the minutes ratio that we have, which would put them in the top It's not top five. Yeah, it's top five.
Yeah.
Top five in the league in terms of like rookie minutes. And again, understand people, it doesn't mean that we think the rookie is going to be bad long term. We think it's just like the first year of the league. It takes a while for you to catch up to speed.
But if you want to go over for the Pistons, then you're saying they're going to win 24 or more. And if you want to go under, it's 25 or fewer. So like that's a pretty low number.
This team is going to try.
They are at least in the beginning. Now my general thought is always that gravity is going to bring teams down. Like even though having the fifth worst record is not as much better as, you know, the eighth worst or whatever than it used to be, it still is better. Like, you know, your odds are better. And that's kind of the other part with this gravity is that
you think they're going to have a shot at Penn State?
Yes. I think at least in the early going, they will. I think it's going to be health, like maybe if they have some injuries or anything like that, but I think what's surprising to me about it. I mean, Dwayne Casey's teams, I think generally defend pretty well in the regular season. Like they were 18th in defense last year. They were the only team that was in kind of the bottom part of the league that was top 10 or was not bottom 10 in either offense or defense, which I think is really interesting. And when you think about their talent compared to some of these others, like Jeremy Grant, I mean, he's a very good player. He presumably, like, they kept him on the team for a reason. Like, yeah, maybe they could move him at the deadline, but it seems like he wants to be there. He chose to be there recently. So I think this is going to be an over. What cautions me a little bit, and I'm still torn. I'm going to listen to what you have to say in terms of whether I'm play or fade here. Like, I think they're a better team than this. And I think they're a meaningfully better team than this. And here's the interesting part of it is that I could see them, you know, putting on the brake late in the season and still getting to 24. Like 24 is not a lot of wins. It's not insanely low, like 18 or something like that, but it's also not high.
Are they the second worst team in the East?
I think they're the third worst team in the East, personally.
They're better than Cleveland, right?
I do. Now that Cleveland traded Larry Gantz, I think they're better than Cleveland.
Who are they better at? Do you think they're better than Houston?
Game to game, yes. I wouldn't be surprised if Houston finished with a better record. I think Houston isn't really,
we're gonna talk about them, but I think Houston's probably like, in terms of athletic ability, they're better athletically than Detroit. They're probably more of a mess because of the experience, but they're better athletically. Like, one thing that's impressed me about that Houston team when I've seen them, it's like that they've got some athletes on it. It's a mess though, but like they're better than Oklahoma City. So I mean, Oklahoma City probably has the better player, but I think overall they're better than Oklahoma City, right?
Yeah, and also like you think of some of the structural elements. Like they have a coach who generally is more of a build rather than a rebuild. You know, like he usually kind of pushes, and also like they have some young guys who can play. You know, like, yeah, they're going to be relying a lot on Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart and some of these other guys, but like they have a pretty good overall talent level. Like they can. They're like one of the ways to think about this is like how many minutes are you going to be giving to absolute, you know, like scrubs?
So and in raw terms, we're saying, do we think this team is a win better than they were last year?
I think so. I also think like Cade is not going to be. I mean, I don't think he's going to set the world on fire his rookie year, but he plays defense pretty well. I mean, I'm become a believer in his jump shot. So I think that he will be better than most high level rookies because his floor is higher because he actually tries on defense.
The situation with Cade is like, and is that Cade was better than his team, and Cade was really better than the talent around him at the previous level. Now, and what I mean by that is like, so there was a lot of like wasted motion, wasted action in terms of things that, you know, he could do that his team just couldn't help. Like he, as he would make a move. But talent, like if you watch him long enough on film, like so, like his talent was better than his stats. God, I'm really uncomfortable like taking the. I mean, although historically, like I'm looking at it, Dwayne Casey teams go. I've gone over 73% of the time,
yeah,
right?
I'm overplay.
But here's the thing: like the reason I'm kind of counting that is like basically Kyle Lowry. Like anything with Kyle Lowry basically goes over. So no, it's like I think that the Raptors are 8-1 with Kyle Lowry over, and then like without Kyle Lowry, they're like 1-9, right? Over the last 19 years. So it's like it's one of those things where like I'm over, but I don't know if I want to play this, right?
I think we're gonna have the same dynamic as before. We pick the same thing, I play it, you fade it. But don't worry, I'm gonna have a lot of fades later. I'm putting some in now.
I think it's over. I'm willing to go overplay on this. And even though it's gonna be tight and probably expensive.
Yeah, I think we're gonna be sitting there and they're gonna have 23 wins in the last week of the season. We're just gonna be like, son of a bitch.
So I'm gonna go overplay. And the reason I'm gonna overplay is I do think this team is very much of the mindset that they want to, this is a team that wants to win, right? So I think that they want to get to, like, to them, getting to 29 wins or something like that would be significant. They're going to try to get there, and they're going to try to compete for the – they want the play.
Right. Like, one of the good proxies that you and I have used over the years, and usually we talk about this with better teams, is could you see a way that they win 5 more games than their projection? Because if you can't, then it's probably, you know, like, then you're betting on maybe an outlier outcome. Could I see the Pistons winning 28, 29 games? Absolutely.
Like, I could see the Pistons winning 35 games if, like, Cade is
yeah, and also, like, here's the other part of it. They have Killian Hayes. I don't love Killian Hayes, but if he's not playing well, they don't, like, they already have Cade. They don't need to go, they don't need to give him legacy minutes.
Plays like his film, not his numbers, right? Because he has better talent around him. Then, yeah, I could see him win another 35 games. Because he will be, like, if Cade looks like the best player on the court, like, 70% of the nights, then, yeah, they could see him winning 35 games.
Hey, if he's the best player on the court 50% or 40%, they're winning a bunch of games. Like, if Cade's that, then you're sitting in really good territory. Remember, he's playing with Jeremy Grant and a couple other guys.
The problem is, like, yeah, there's not a lot of depth to this team yet. But yeah, I can totally see them going over. So yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay, so rookie of the year for Cade, it's 2.6 to 1. I like to put it in those terms. I think that's probably easy. So, like, our bet 100, win 260. I think that's a pretty good number. Like, I don't think it's really favorable. I think that's well set. I think he's the favorite to win it, but I mean, an injury, I think, I don't think that he can win it with this field. He can win it if he misses 20 or more games. And there are some other real contenders. So I would rather bet Detroit's over than Cade winning rookie of the year. But I mean, if you like Cade, then I have no problem with it. I think he's going to be the best player.
I'll say Cade at 260 is interesting, but it's not blowing me away.
Yes, I will say the same.
Cade at plus 260 is fine, not great. Like, I'm not hating on it. I don't think Casey's basically going to feed him the ball that, right?
They have a lot of guys on this team that I think expect to have the ball in their hands. And Cunningham's catch and shoot is going to work well with that. But, I mean, we even saw it in Summer League. Like, he was very willing to defer to Saven Lee and to Killian, and they'll have Jeremy Grant on that team.
I would rather be holding Suggs than holding K for a
game. Basically triple the payout. Like, I mean, that's what makes it different.
If Cade is the runaway rookie lead, I mean,
I think Cade is the superior player by a meaningful margin. So,
yeah,
like,
yeah, no, I think this is, to be clear, well, I don't know if that's, I mean, we don't know about Suggs enough long term to say that. I do think that, like, from what I've seen from Cade, I do think he's a better player, but I don't think it's runaway, right? Like, I think this season is, like, the rookie class, and we'll get to the guys I like a little later, but, like, the rookie class is really interesting because there's a lot of, like, there wasn't really one guy who's head and shoulders above in terms of his numbers. I think Mobley was. We'll talk about Mobley in a second. But Mobley has, I think Mobley will take a while to develop, and his game is more geared. It's more like DeAndre Ayton's game, right? So which means that, like, you know, 5 years from now, yeah, he was obviously the better player, but he might not be the best player as a rookie because he has to pick up, like, some defensive things. With that note, let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, let's do it. So the Cavs roughly won 21 games, converting it to 82 games last year.
25
games, and Vegas thinks they're going to be about the same. They had a fair amount of turnover. They lost Taurean Prince and recently Larry Nance Jr. They added Lauri Markkanen. They added Ricky Rubio. They drafted Evan Mobley, and they also had this weird year in terms of injuries. Like, basically Kevin Love didn't play. Now we'll see if he actually plays for them. Garland missed some time, as it seems like he always does. Nance missed a bunch of the year, even though he was on the team. But then they got Jared Allen midway through. So for me, there are kind of a couple different parts with Cleveland. So if you want to go over with them, it's 26 or up. And if you want to go under, it's 27 and down. And so, I mean, that's broadly in line with the way they played last year. They had the, you know, there was a little, that, I mean, the, actually, I guess they outperformed their differential by a little bit.
Basically, the market projection is right in the middle.
Yeah.
It's the second team, like, it was right in the middle for Detroit, and it was right in the middle. It's like, it's not right in the middle. It's a little more towards the over side. Historically, Cleveland has finished under, and remember, I'm looking at 19 years where a lot of them, they had LeBron James.
Well, it makes sense, though, for me, for LeBron teams to go under more often, yes, because there was a lot of optimism. I remember you and I used to have that as a running bit, that we would almost always go under on LeBron teams.
Well, you say that like we're not going to, let me not give spoilers, but I'm looking forward to the Lakers this year. But let's not, we'll get to that later. could you see, let's talk about it again like that. Could you see Cleveland winning 32 games?
I don't think I could see them winning 32. I could see them winning like high 20s, low 30s.
That roster is a mess, isn't it?
It's a mess. And like they have some guys that I like, but is like, for example, is Jared Allen good enough by himself? You know, Allen and Okoro are probably their two best, now that they traded Larry Nance, are probably their two best defenders. And...
Well, Ricky's pretty good.
Oh, and Ricky, yeah. Ricky, who's in the rotation, I don't think he's gonna start. And so, like, yeah, is it possible that those guys and some shooting luck can get them to, like, 20th? Yeah, maybe. I remember the Cavs last year were 28th in offense and 25th in defense. So, but for me, like, you get into this point where, so it's like, okay, what is a 26 win team? Like, that's roughly the area we're talking about. It's like, that's probably about the fourth, fifth, sixth worst team in the league. That's generally about where that's been. I think the Cavs are, you know, like the third, fourth, fifth worst team in the league. So I'm going under. This is a challenging one though.
They're worse than Detroit.
They're worse than Detroit as well. But what I'm torn on is whether to play it or not.
They're worse than a fully healthy Magic.
But they're not worse than
like what the average Magic is going to be next year.
Yeah, I think that might be it, because the Magic have so much variance in terms of health and how much their best guys play and everything like
they're
that.
They're better than Oklahoma City, even though I think Oklahoma City has the better players.
I'm not sure they're better than Oklahoma City. We'll get there later.
Houston. What do you think about terms of them?
I think they're worse than Houston full strength, but I don't know how much we're going to see Houston full strength. You know, like, will they trade some of their guys? Are they going to give John Wall a bunch of rest? Like, that type of stuff. Like, I think we'll see it. So for me, like, I'm an under on this, but I don't think I want to play, because one of the other big things that the Cavs have going for them is age-related progression. So Darius Garland was horrendous as a rookie, and he was much better last year, and I think he'll be much better again this year. And Sexton, you know, like, what kind of role do they give him?
Has this organization developed anybody?
I mean, not necessarily. They haven't been particularly... I mean, Larry Nance, I guess you could say. I don't know exactly how that happened, but he got a lot better than he was originally. Now, they paid him for a long time like he was better than he was, and then he exceeded eventually. But they haven't done a great job of that. But, you know, it continues to be a different coaching staff seemingly every year, but it is a different coaching staff.
Who's their coach now?
JB Bickerstaff. So he took over for Beeline. He was a Beeline assistant. He took over for him. And so he had the reins last year, and he has them again this year.
Yikes.
I think Bickerstaff's fine.
Here's the thing. The best player on the team, to me, right, is probably Rubio. Like as an actual basketball contributing for
I think it's probably Jared Allen. I like Jared Allen. Does this team have a top 20 starter at any position? Because like, if a team doesn't have a top 20 player at any position,
they probably do, but they don't. I would probably say Rubio's borderline to that, but they're not going to play him.
I don't think Rubio's the top 20 point guard anymore. I like Rubio, but I don't think he's there. Allen, I think has the best chance.
I think
his offensive game has really taken a step back over the last couple of years, and that's more important. But it's, yeah, I mean, so, but I'm still under fade, because I think that there is a path. Like, if they have enough competence at a couple different positions, I think that they want to try enough that I think that they'll be in this mix. Like, I don't think they're going to win 18 games. Like, you know, that's for those sorts of teams. And I think they could be bad, but I don't think they want to be that bad. And Cleveland, they could end up being like, if I'm as low as I am, like I said, I think they're the third, like maybe like the third worst team in the league. Oftentimes those teams actually can win a couple games towards the end, because it doesn't make that much of a difference in terms of the record.
I think the issue is also that I think there's a couple teams that, like, teams not their vision above this are going to care, right? Because I think that, like, the thing that's happening because of the play-in, because we're going to 10, there's going to be about 12 teams that are playing hard, and I think a lot of them are going to be in that central, because I think the teams in the central are going to they're going to care about getting that 10 seed or getting into the playoffs. So I don't think they're going to get easy games late in the season, right? So, God, I'm really looking at the end of the play here. Even though Darko's going over, I'm like, I like Mobley. You know what? I'm going to go under for it, because I do like Mobley. I do think Mobley could be really good, or like good enough that, like, yeah, they just because he's good enough, they win over 25. Like, they win over, you know, there's what, 25 and a half? Yeah, I mean, they won 26 games. Such a mess. So anyway, what do we think about Rookie of the Year for this team? What do we think about, like, Rookie of the Year for Mobley? He's, best bet is 12-1.
I, I don't think big men, especially a big man who now that they got Markkanen, like his role within the rotation is a little less clear. I don't think he's going to get enough touches. And Mobley, I think he's intriguing defensively in time. So I think it's hard for players like that to win Rookie of the Year. I think Mobley's going to be a good player. I think he's going to be that, but I don't think he's going to win Rookie of the Year. So I don't like that.
Yeah, there's guys in better situations. I agree with that. I do agree with that. Unless if he's winning Rookie of the Year, then basically this is a little... But I don't think he's going to get enough touches to do it.
Yeah. I think there are ways, like for Mobley, that we could feel good about where he's going and he doesn't win Rookie of the Year. Like it can happen, especially when there are guys above him who are going to be getting a bunch of touches. Like if this isn't a Malcolm Brogdon versus Joel Embiid situation, like there are going to be guys with better cases than Brogdon had that year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah.
And also Mobley's not a Joel Embiid to make it clear.
Yeah, we'll talk about my dark horse is in a really good situation, but there's a couple guys who are going to be like in winning situations and may get like starting gigs. And if they do that, then starting gig on a good team might like basically shine out. Like, you know, guy who's getting not enough reps on a bad team. So we are getting now to the surprisingly, didn't blow it up that much, Washington Wizards.
Yeah, and the Wizards, so they won, let's call it 39 games last year. They made a series of moves, including sending Russell Westbrook to the Lakers for a collection of players that included Kyle Kuzma and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And Vegas is much less optimistic about the Wizards. They, even though they had the differential last year of a 37-win team, so, you know, roughly in line with where they were.
Yeah, won about 39.
Yeah, they won about 39, so not too far off in that direction. The Vegas thinks they're over under, basically it's a 34.5, so it's kind of 34 if you want to go under, 35 if you want to go over. And I don't think it's a definite, especially when you consider that they could trade Bradley Beal, but I think they're meaningfully better than this. Like, I think this isn't over. What I'm torn on is whether this is player fate.
I do think, like, it's important. This is the first team we're looking at where, like, this is not a bunch of rookies, right? So this team has, everyone on the team is, like, pretty much, mostly everyone on the team has played before. Did Scotty get fired or is Scotty still there?
Scotty is gone. Technically, he wasn't fired. His contract just expired. They hired Wes Unseld Jr., who, another highly regarded assistant. My big concern for the Wiz is their defense, because 2 years ago they were dead last and they were truly terrible, and they did better last year. I think some of that was, you know, that they were competing for something, and part of it was also that Thomas Bryant, you know, like they kind of in some ways partially replaced him with Robin Lopez, and now Robin Lopez is in Orlando playing who knows how much, and so Bryant is back to playing a larger role, though they do have Daniel Gafford now who can be a part of their rotation. So I worry,
they got a bunch of guys who are rated positives. I mean, like, it kind of depends a little bit, like, their upside is Rue improving, like Denny being available and improving, and what they get from Kuzma, right? But they do have guys that are kind of like Gafford, KCP is generally positive.
Yeah, like,
Bertans can shoot the ball, like, you've got Beal.
Yeah,
these are basketball players, right?
Yeah, and I mean, you do have a concern that the Wizards could, like, if they pull the ripcord, they could pull it hard enough to easily go under this. Like, if they trade Bradley Beal in January, they might do some other...
They play in a crap comp. They play in one of the crappier divisions.
Yeah, they also have that. Here's the other part. Like, ownership matters for this. And Ted Leonsis has generally said, like, he's tried to be competitive. Like, that has been a goal of his. And 36 wins, like, that's probably in the mix. And I think if the Wizards are in that general area, I don't know that they'll necessarily keep Beal. But, like, okay, let's say this isn't going to happen. But let's say
could you see them win half their games?
Absolutely, yeah. And so, like, let's say this isn't going to happen.
Because if they were in the Atlantic, no. But in the Southeast?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's plausible. Arturo, here's the example I want to give you. So let's say this isn't going to happen. Let's say they traded Bradley Beal for no current players. Like, let's say you're not replacing anybody in the rotation. Their starting five then becomes, presumably, Dinwiddie, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, probably Denny Avdija as a practical consideration. Kuzma. Then either Bertans or Hachimura, Kuzma, Bertans, whoever that they like the best, and then whichever center is playing the best for them. Like, that's not a terrible team. Like, it's not great, like, but it's still better than, like, the Cavs and the where I think the Magic are going to be. Like, even if they dumped Beal, I still think they're not a bottom five team in the league.
Yeah, I'm good with overplay on this. 35 is a number that I think as an organization, they're probably going to.
Yeah, I'll play it. I'm overplay. Wow, three plays. That's unusual.
Yeah, you're very aggressive this year.
Yeah, that's not going to continue.
Making me feel bad here.
Yeah. And they don't have any rookies.
It's a reasonable play. And I don't think Beal for MVP is something we want.
No. So we.
What is the price for Beal on MVP? I'm actually curious. Let's see. Bradley Beal, fine. Beal. It's kind of like 20.
I think it's 750. Yeah.
75-1. Jeez.
Yeah. 75-1.
That's too rich.
That's too rich.
Interesting question. Do we think they can win the Southeast?
No.
What are the odds on it? Southeast for Washington, let's see.
I mean, there is a chance that the number is just so ridiculous that you get it.
35-1 to win the Southeast.
I think that's a reasonable number, but I don't think I'd bet it anyway. Like that's a reasonable number though. Like, I mean, if you're a Wizards optimist, I mean, 35-1, Miami, like there are teams in this division that can't, Miami, Atlanta, like I think both of them will have a better record.
So
Charlotte could.
The upside I have, one standard deviation move for Washington for Darko is about 50 wins.
Wow.
One standard deviation is literally everything breaking right for them. Absolutely everything breaking right, everything breaking wrong for everybody else.
Sure.
Right? So, that's like a 5% outcome. So it's basically saying like, they should be like, you know, 2-3% to win that. So 35-1 is interesting. Would I want to have money on this?
I don't think I would.
It's intriguing, but like, unless you're like a Wizard, if you're a Wizards homer, it might be a fun number to take. Here's what I would say. I'm going to monitor the division odds for the Wizards, and it might be something I bet within a month of the season, right? So if they come out.
If it goes like 45 or something.
Yeah, if Rui and Denny are playing well, and it looks like this team is progressing in the West Onslaught, then yeah, like that 35-20, you'll get it like a 20-1, and that may be a really interesting number to bet. Because it's Southeast, some random team always with the stuff. Like it's always, Southeast is always madness, right? So there's a possibility that could have value. But I'm going to hold until I actually see a little bit more of these teams.
I think that's totally fair. So we can move on to the Toronto Raptors. And this is a really fascinating one for me because the Raptors, so last year they had this brutal 27-45 season. They had a negative point differential, but they underperformed their point differential by the most in the entire NBA last year. Negative 6.4 below their expectation, but that's also in a shortened season. And so you have that, and then the over-under line for them in Vegas is 37.5. So if you want to go over 38+, if you want to go under 37-, and I feel that this current Raptors team is much better than that number. I think that the current Raptors, if I were to say you put this team, even without Kyle Lowry, you know, if you put in, you know, you Fred VanVleet and Siakam and OG and Scottie Barnes is of course going to play and everything else, even with my concerns about the center position, I think Nick Nurse is one hell of a coach. I think they're better than this, but I'm not going to play it because everything is screaming to me that they could make moves, and any move they make is going to make them worse in the present. Like that's just what Masai would do.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you strongly here. I think they're the worst team in the division.
Wow.
Which it is.
Well, the worst team in the division, I mean, that just means they're worse than the Knicks. I mean, there are three very good teams in this division, or two elite teams and one pretty good team.
Like I don't think that the Raptors are bad necessarily. It's just like they're the worst team in their division, and they're clearly the worst team in the division. They're worse than the Knicks. I think the motivation on this team is like they have to do something. So I think my suspicion is they're going to get worse this season, not better. And I think I'm comfortably under on this team.
Wow.
We're projecting like 37.5. As good as I think. I just kind of like, I'm not, they set that number very strongly. 37.5 is.
It's a good number. Like I expected for it to be lower and for me to go over harder, but instead they made it kind of a good. And remember, like they had a true season from hell last year. And yes, it's not the same team as they were 2 years ago, but 2 years ago, they were 53-19. They had a plus 5.7 differential. I don't think they're that team anymore, but is it that hard
to let them in? Are we going to let them in and out of the country this year?
We don't know for sure yet. I'm modestly optimistic.
I'm moderately pessimistic on that. So I think like between that mess and the travel, the whole COVID thing and that, I feel like this is an underplay.
Okay. Wow, I'm enjoying this disagreement.
I think that we underrate Kyle Lowry, and I think that...
But they got Dragic, and I mean, Dragic looked a little bit, he looked a little bit...
We overrate Goran Dragic.
Also true.
So we underrate Kyle Lowry, we overrate Goran Dragic, and I love Dwayne Casey, but he just... I love Nick Nurse, but he doesn't have the horses on this team. This team is kind of missing stuff, and this is a much worse team than it was 2 years ago, right? This, like...
They've lost something offensively and defensively. I mean, remember, that team had Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, and that was part of why they were so good defensively. They didn't have Danny Green 2 years ago. He was on the Lakers at that point.
But the point being that, like, I think, I mean, again, just things have to end sometimes. And I don't think this team has the horses for it. And I didn't love their draft at all. I didn't like the guys they drafted. I don't like
Scottie Barnes rookie of the year odds. I'll mention that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the roster that they currently have. Like, I think Siakam is fine. I think OJ is fine. I think Brooklyn Bleed is fine. But after you get past that, it's kind of a mess of a roster. Like, there isn't anything positive after that. And I do kind of think that they're probably going to move. I think they're probably going to move Siakam. We talked about this before. And I think they're basically, you know, depending on what the outcome of the Ben Simmons trade is, whoever is disappointed is going to make a call to Toronto, right? And I think that's kind of what's going on, which is I think Toronto is the bridesmaid to that Ben Simmons situation. So I'm under on this team, and do I want to bet it is the question. It's this line, man. If this line was 38.5, I would just like slam it, no problem under. 37.5 is rough. Is this a better team than Washington?
I worry a lot about their offense. I think they are defensively. I think they're a lot better defensively.
Let me quantify that. So, like, I think if Washington was in the Atlantic, I would flip this equation. If Toronto was in the Southeast, then yes, I would like the upside on Toronto because of the Southeast. But by having Toronto in the Atlantic against, like, you know, these are like, again, the teams in front of them are four really tough teams, right? Two of the best teams in the league, with Boston, who's probably going to have a better season, and New York, who's going to play hard every night. And I think Toronto is more like, you know, I don't know what their identity is. They're not as tough a facility as they used to be, and I think they might blow it up, right? That said, I have respect for Nurse. But I also have respect for Lowry. I think that, again, I think the problem is, like, if I start looking at the ifs on this team, like, you know, Goran is probably going to get hurt, right? Because that's who he is, right?
They won't play him that much. I mean, there are a lot, and we've already seen the Raptors be willing to take their foot off the gas pedal if they're not close.
They might not be able to play every game in Canada. Yeah. There's a lot of, like little things kind of, you know, at play. I'm going to go under play on this team. It's just,
interesting.
Again,
that's totally fair. I'm over fade. I'm more confident in the fade than I am in the over or under. I think there are plenty of reasons to go under, but I just think they're more talented than this. Like, if they keep it close together, I think they're over 500 team.
I really don't. I think that, like, Fred VanVleet's a great third. Like,
are you playing it or are you fading it?
Yes, no, I'm playing. Yes,
okay.
I copied the wrong thing. Thank you. Underplay. Fred VanVleet would be a great third or fourth best guy on a good team.
Oh, I mean, there are so many guys on the Raptors that...
Look at Siakam. It's like...
Well, an OG. I mean, if OG...
Yeah, OG's a great guy to have a rotation, but they don't have a one or two guy, right? They really don't. They don't have a one or two on a good team guy. And really, they can't get away with that on this team. And there's too many, like, we're also back on a team that has...
But see, I think they're gonna catch a lot of teams. They try hard on defense. They have a lot of talent. I think they'll be one of those teams that just, like, catches teams and gets regular season wins.
Not if they're playing on the true court.
Yeah, true. Yeah, we'll see.
That's like, this is why I'm going, like, I think I'm basically saying, like, I don't think they're gonna get to play, like, 41 games at home either. But I'm gonna put a note saying, like, Arturo does not think they get 41 games. This is part of my evaluation. I don't think they get to play 41.
Yeah.
Because my prior right now is, like, assume that, like, the dumbest possible outcome is the outcome that we're going to get for Kobe, right? So,
yeah.
Yes. Under that assumption, I don't think they're going to get 41 games. I just don't think it's going to happen. Because, like, the problem is, like, because there's still story talking about the vaccination stuff, you might not be able to, like, move whole teams across the border. You may not be able to field games. I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to have to play somewhere where, like, you don't have to cross the international.
and we both don't like Scotty Barnes for Giddy Urods, so I don't think we need to
dwell on that. And we don't like the division odds at all, either.
No.
What are they to win the division? I think this might be the lowest their odds have been to win the Atlantic ever. It's, goodness, let's see. 51.
Ah.
And I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
So let's go to the Charlotte Hornets. And the Hornets are fascinating because, so they, last year, I'll use Queen of Glass's, the Parade 2, they had the differential of 34 or 35 win team. And they definitely had some turnover. They lost Devontae Graham. They lost Cody Zeller. They added Mason Plumlee via trade. Kelly Oubre is a signing. Ish Smith. They're going to play Book Night, presumably at least a fair amount. And Vegas is significantly more optimistic about the Hornets, a team than that. And so the over-under is 37.5. If you think they're going over, you're saying 38+. If you think they're going under, it's 37+. 37 minus, sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yes, I think I stepped on my, I accidentally hit the mute. I thought I was unmuted. I was just saying that I think this team is worse than last year. But it's kind of weird because I do think that, like, there's some upside with Hayward, but, you know, Hayward always gets hurt, so it's weird. I don't like Oubre. He was dramatically bad for Golden State. I don't know that necessarily he's a better fit here because, again, it's a problem with like his offense just doesn't hold up. And they have rookies that I don't like. Do I feel strongly about it? You know, I get where Darko's coming from on the other. What about you?
I think that internal improvement will help them. I mean, LaMelo had a successful year, and remember, he missed some time last year too. He missed, I think, roughly 20 games, and of course Hayward missed time, but he always misses time. But PJ Washington and Miles Bridges, and like, there's some guys there that can be better, but a couple of big kind of larger concerns for me. So I thought Borrego did a decent job with them defensively last year, basically like that they did some zone, they did some different things, but I was really hoping they were going to add, like, fix the center rotation. I don't think Mason Plumlee does that, just like I didn't think he would do that for the Pistons last year. I think it was right there. So I can see a path for the over, but I don't think it's as likely for two reasons. One is that that's a higher bar than they had last year, and while I think they have some internal improvement, I don't think the roster is meaningfully better. And two, because I phrase it this way and people sometimes get mad, but like, in my opinion, there are more ways to go under than to go over. Like, if there's team chemistry issues.
Gordon Hayward's on the team.
Or if you have serious injuries, or, you know, like, there are guys that just aren't as good, because it's like, I think that that's, to me, that feels more likely. I believe that's, like, generally kind of borne out to an extent, and like,
They also added some minefields. I don't like Kelly Oubre.
Yeah, they added, and how much time are they going to give James Booknight, who I think is going to be, like almost all rookies, is going to be a negative player. So I'm under fade, not under play, though I think I might, I could regret not playing it, just because I could see them winning like 32, 33.
Are they better than Washington?
I don't think so. I think they're, as they stand right now, I think Washington's better, but if we're doing expected roster over the course of the season, I think they're pretty close, because I think there's a meaningful chance that Beal's gone or some other Wizards, whereas I think the Hornets are keeping it together.
But I think the Wizards roster is less fragile than the Hornets roster.
I would agree with that.
I don't like their upside. There's just too much wonkiness, and I love LaMelo, but again, as a Celtics fan, I had Hayward on my team, so I'm aware that Hayward is just gonna miss time, right? So Hayward's gonna miss time. And then that gets you into, like, weird rotations. And Devontae Graham was a good player, and the reason they lost him, you're familiar with the Devontae situation, right?
Yeah.
Like, they lost him because of, you know, the behavioral, like, not necessarily play issues. He was a good player, I mean, he had some...
Well, and I think they didn't like, they kind of saw where the team was going and didn't think that there was really a good spot for him and all that stuff too. Like, it's,
but they also, like, so basically you're looking at it and going like, okay, so could I see them winning 41 games? No.
I could see it, but I wouldn't expect it. Like it would be basically the defense holds firm and LaMelo is just even better. Like, if LaMelo takes another big step forward, and they're like, all of a sudden when he's on the floor, they're a top 10 offense, then you're starting to make some real hay. But like, do I think that's the most likely thing, that they have a top 10 offense when he's on the floor this year? No. Like, that would be insanely good.
Yeah, I'm agree with that. Are we both under fade, or?
I'm under fade. I don't know what you are.
It's a good number. Although Darko seems to think it's low. I mean, Darko is very strong on the play. It's the Southeast, though. So I'm like, is there a weakness in front of them? After this in the Southeast, like, we're already like, I think Washington's better. So they're like the fourth best team in the Southeast, and they could win 38, like, you know, under 30. I'm going to go under Fade too. I could see LaMelo basically being good enough to get him over this number, right? But he has to be good enough to get him over this number, because the other way this happens is if Gordon Hayward plays 81 games. And I don't think Gordon Hayward's playing 81 games, right? So under both those scenarios, I'm going to say this is why I'm going Fade, which, because I think there is enough that, like, if that, again, this is one of those lines, if it was like a win higher, I'd probably go the other way. 37.5 is kind of too rich.
Yeah. So let's go to the Knicks. And the Knicks last year, they had the differential. I said they you know, had this massively successful season, 41-31. They had the differential over an 82 game sketch of a 47 win team. They were about even with their differential. And yes, they did have opponent shooting luck, but I also think they ended up getting better in the offseason. And basically the Vegas thinks they're going to be a 500 team. If you want to go over, it's 41 plus. If you want to go under, it's 41 minus. And the Knicks were, like, one of the important factors, I'm guessing you're going to talk about this, is that the Knicks were very healthy last year. Overall, they did, Mitchell Robinson missed time, and they also, they didn't get Derrick Rose until partway through the season. But they also upgraded in terms of talent. I mean, I think, as much as I like Reggie Bullock, I think Evan Fournier is better.
There's two problems for the Knicks, right? So let's go for the positives first. This is regular season. Regular season, Tom Thibodeau's teams basically play really hard in the regular season, right?
They do.
They basically will play, they will play like it's the playoffs, right? And they will go as hard as possible, play like short rotations and play their best guys. So they're going to give you, like, a Tom Thibodeau team is going to give you the best chance of getting the best regular season record. The problem is, while they improve, their entire division improved too, right? So
sure.
So I mean,
well, we'll see about Philly, but Philly's better than them.
We'll see about Philly, but, like, technically every other team in that division.
Well, and not only did the Atlantic improve, but also a lot of the middle of the East improved. So teams like the Bulls and the Pacers, because the Pacers were so injured, we'll talk about them soon enough.
I think that, like, on a neutral court, they're better than the Bulls, but, like, the Bulls play in a worse division, right? So their schedule is easy.
But that's a maybe a couple of games a year. Like, I think that's it's not a dramatic thing.
I have it a game and a half right now. So, like, I'm going to say that. So the bet with the Knicks is they're going to play as hard as possible. They have a tough schedule, but if they get anything out of Kemba, then this number is silly, right?
But here's the other thing. Here's why I'm overplay on the Knicks, and that's feels weird to me, is even if they don't get stuff from Kemba, they have other players. Like, Quickly, I think, can take a step forward. They have full season of Rose. They have Alec Burks. Like, they have other guys.
Could you see this Knicks team winning 47 games?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Overplay. I could see this team winning 50 games if Kemba's like...
I thought this number was going to be like 44, and I was going to really struggle with it.
Yeah. I mean, I understand there's progress. There's guys on this team that are improving. There's guys that got hurt. And Tibbs will just play them as hard as possible.
Well, and like, they're not super old. Like, I mean, Taj Gibson is old. But, like, Randall's 27, this will be his age 27 season. Rose, 33, that isn't great, but you have these other guys in the rotation. Noel, 27. They have a lot of guys who I think are going to kind of hold firm, and then they have some young guys that could get better. Do I think that Obi Toppin's going to take a huge step forward? No, but could he? Sure. Could Quickly, could, and they're deep.
I love Kemba when healthy, and they got him really cheap, and it's an upside play. I think we're both on overplay on this.
Yeah.
Right? I think that worse, I'm going to be sweating this the last week of the season.
Yeah.
And the Knicks will basically be trying to kill themselves.
Well, and also, like, Julius Randle, as great of a year as he had, like, I think if you were asking him to do the same thing, that would be a struggle. Like, he had this phenomenal year, but now he has to do a lot less because they have these other players that can create around him, that can make life easier on him.
And RJ Barrett should continue to get better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's not a top 150 guy. Knicks fans mad, but, like, well, I mean, he's also 21 years old. Like, he's very young. He's also improving. So, and again, this is the kind of feel, like, I would feel uncomfortable betting the under on a Tom Thibodeau team, right? But the over, I'm like, look at this team going at that number and going like, yeah, 41. Like, do I think that they're gonna fight to get over 500, right? That, because that's just like every night they're going to be like, it's a Thibodeau team. They will be trying their absolute hardest every single night, right? It doesn't matter if it's a back to back in LA, they're gonna be going, right? So I feel comfortable kind of taking this. Night. We
don't have, no rookie of the year, no MVP for them. They're just not. Yeah, they're not that
like
good team.
I don't like. No, they're not going to win the division.
No, their division's too strong.
Playing, but no, you can play them.
Like, it could be a curiosity if you're a Knicks fan and you'd rather do that than, like, bet the over. Sure. because maybe, I'm sure it's crazy high. But like,
it's 30-1. What is it gonna, how many wins is it gonna take to win the Atlantic?
55.
Because like, the problem with the Atlantic
58? It's gonna be crazy.
The Atlantic are going to care about home court, and they're gonna care about home court of the finals, right?
Yeah, and they're also better than the Knicks, as well as the Knicks played, as optimistic as I am about it, picking by overplay, but
they don't have two MVPs on, yes.
Yes. Okay, so let's go to the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are fascinating. They underperformed relative to their own lofty expectations last year. They had the differential of a 38 win team, and they underperformed that in terms of record. They were 31-41. But they have a full year of Vooch. They have Lonzo Ball in the rotation now. They have DeMar DeRozan in the rotation now. And so Vegas is very optimistic about the Bulls. Over-under set at 41.5 either way. So that means 41 minus for under, 42 plus for over.
This is the easiest bet so far for me. Under. Play. Absolutely the easiest bet.
I think there is a way that they're clearly an over 500 team, and that's that their offense is good and their defense is okay. Like, I'm not a Billy Donovan.
DeMar DeRozan misses 60 games.
Well, they're really shallow on the forward line. I mean, that's one of the big problems with this team. They don't have those kind of the Bulls, especially. I mean, they had to sign and trade Garrett Temple to make the Lonzo trade work. And one of the challenges for Chicago is kind of the apportionment of their talent. Like, they have a bunch of guys that do certain things, and then maybe Derek Jones can step in. I actually like Derek Jones a lot. I thought he was underutilized in Portland, but also he wasn't that good. So like, maybe he just isn't the guy that I hoped he would be. But the challenge for Chicago, and I'll go underplay as well, is their defense. Like, this team does not have defense. They do not have much in the way of defensive talent, and the defensive talent they have isn't going to play.
There's another challenge for Chicago, right? If you've got DeMar DeRozan, right, and Vucevic, and Zach LaVine, right, should DeMar DeRozan ever get touches in the last 2 minutes? No.
I mean, maybe some. Like, if there are...
There's no justification. Like, really, if you look at this team, there's no justification to having the ball in like, DeMar DeRozan's hand at the end of the game, and they will have the ball in his hand at the end of the game, because really they have better offensive players that should have touches. So functionally, if there's no offensive value in having DeMar DeRozan on the court, and there's definitely no value in having him defensively on the court, because we've shown that, like, oh no, defensive, like, teams, and like, the team gets worse when he's on the court, but he's the highest paid player on the team, then really, like, we, you know, on the chats I'm in, like, with all the insiders and stuff, like, everybody was happy with what they did until they did the sign. We're like, if they'd done everything they did but signed DeMar DeRozan, I would be probably, like, on the
edge. I mean, there is a meaningful chance that Thaddeus Young is a more positive player for his team next year than DeRozan. Like, it's possible. I think, especially because what DeRozan did...
We'll talk about the Spurs.
But yeah, I mean, I'm just saying in general, like, Thaddeus Young is a poor fit for the Spurs, but, like, Thaddeus Young was, he was Nate's sixth man of the year last year. He was in the mix for me. He also started a bunch for them at different points in the year. But, like, I think, because what you're getting at with DeRozan is this point that what made him useful for the Spurs is less useful for the Bulls, and what the Spurs overcame defensively is harder for the Bulls to overcome.
But the Spurs were better when DeMar DeRozan was not on the court.
Also true. I mean, and last year it was less extreme in terms of the talent when he was on and the talent when he was off.
Partly because they lost a bunch of players, right? Yes. So they were missing some of their key players. So, like, you know, but that's the problem. The problem with DeRozan is that the stuff he takes away from you construction-wise is stuff that's, like, really cool. And the problem for me is, like, I would much rather play Lonzo, Zach, and Alex Caruso than play DeMar, right? And that's, like, I would much rather give these guys, like, touches as opposed to DeMar DeRozan. So basically, to me, he's going to be, like, a really he's going to be a net negative for this team, and a significantly more net negative than he was on San Antonio. He's also getting old, right? So,
and it's also, the Bulls also have a challenge that there aren't that many ways for them to pivot. Like, they don't, the forward line, it's DeRozan, Patrick Williams, who I think could take a step forward this year. I really liked him as a prospect. Summer League was eh. But then, like, okay, Derek Jones Jr., he was largely out of the rotation with the Blazers. Then you're getting down to, like, Troy Brown Jr., who I think of as a smaller guy there. Like, they don't have options there, and while I like Tony Bradley as a backup five, they don't really have anybody else. Like, you get into all those, like, this is a weirdly shallow team, and maybe they move Coby White for something that can help them more in the immediate, but I don't think his value is super high. It doesn't seem like they're going to play him that much, like, to really, it seems like he's going to be more of a sell low rather than, like, getting somebody who can really help them, and it's not like the Bulls are a buyout destination or anything like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this team will be fun, But ultimately, they're going to lose a lot of games late. Yeah. Because
and like, just, I think they can be under 500 and still make the play-in and potentially even make the playoffs. But, you know, make it out of the play-in. But I don't think they're winning 42. I just really don't.
I could totally see them winning 30. Like, I could see them winning 5 games less. I could totally see them winning 36. I could see
them winning 43, 44. Like, I can see the path to it. But do I think it's more likely that they win 36?
The more the Rosa misses.
But they don't have the guys to replace him. I mean, it's a challenge.
They can play Caruso.
Yeah, but then they don't have, I guess then Kobe White becomes the backup. Yeah, I mean, there are a couple different fringy possibilities, but yeah, it's not like,
here's the thing, they've got two guys who can put the ball in the ball. They've got two guys who can put the ball in the hole.
Yeah, but they don't have guys who can defend. Like this team, I brought this up with
Lonzo and Caruso can defend.
Yeah, I mean, but if your two best defensive players are guards, like, maybe Pat Williams could step up. Well, and Derrick Jones,
yeah, you're going to need to have Book be your light, but I mean, which Book is fine. You'd like to have another rim protector. You'd like to have a better.
I think that Vooch away from Steve Clifford, Vooch away from some of that stuff, I think it's going to look worse. And Patrick Williams, like, they're going to need him to be a supplemental, like a help guy. And because it's not going to be DeRozan. Like, if DeRozan's guarding fours, are you going to get help rim protection from him? Hell no. Like, I think there are going to be nights where they get...
Yeah, basically, DeRozan basically doesn't add anything offensively. He takes away stuff defensively.
I think he adds stuff.
And he takes away stuff defensively, too.
So he takes so much. I think, for me, it's the offensive part is going to depend on how they use him, but the defensive part, he's abysmal. Danny, he was abysmal last year.
Danny, the problem is, like, there's only one ball, right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of what was happening if you watch the Olympics with Dame on the floor in the Olympics, which is, like, Dame on the floor was bad because the stuff he wasn't bringing enough offensively against, like, you know, if you don't have an illegal defense, you can, like, run 2-5 centers and, like, you take his offensive game enough away that he was so bad defensively that every time he was on the floor, Team USA would struggle because, like, you know, that was the way it was.
Because what he was bringing wasn't as useful as what he was taking.
Yeah, that's fair. And the guys who could bring instead of him were much, like, Zach Levine was much better. And Drew was much better than he was in this particular season. Or Devin Booker, much better. Which is the same thing. It's like, I think the problem is DeMar DeRozan is much, like, is any lineup with DeMar DeRozan is worse for this team than lineups without him, right? Which is, like, kind of the problem with him historically. And it's aggravated by the fact that they don't have personnel to, like, cover his errors at the rim, right? So when was the last time he played on a team, like, didn't have, like, decent
injury? Yeah. So, but I can
answer that. Andrea Bargnani.
Yeah. Okay. No division, no rookie of the year.
No rookie of the year.
So let's go to Indiana. And the Pacers last year, they didn't have a full season from hell like the Raptors did, but they had pretty close. And, I mean, not only in terms of just the guys who were unavailable, TJ Warren only played, I think it was like a couple hundred minutes last year, 117 minutes last year. Oladipo, he was injured, they barely played him. Even like the guys who were on the floor more, like Turner, missed some time. And they also basically mutinied on their head coach, who then got fired after his first year. And so for me, like the way I think about this, okay, so they had this really bad year. They were basically a kind of a neutral team overall. Like they ended up 34 and 38. They had about an even point differential. And then 2 years ago, 1920, plus two differential, you know, plus they were plus three the year before that. And they added Carlisle, who's a better coach than either Bjorkgren or Nate McMillan. And while his voice can ring hollow, it generally doesn't originally, like at the very beginning. So I think the Pacers are a much better team than this. I think that they have a better coach. So I'm overplay.
Yeah, I'm overplay on this team too. I agree with you on all those points. I'm not convinced that it's a coach problem and not a front office problem at this point.
It could be.
Because it does seem that, like, the coaches leave Indiana to go and be very successful at other places.
Yeah, I mean, Vogel was better with the Lakers than I expect him to be. I guess you could say the same for sure with Nate McMillan in Atlanta. But I think that the Pacers, like, the funny thing about it, like, there are always a couple teams like this, and this is why I'm a play and not a fade for them. It's like, yes, I have concerns about how their roster construction and, you know, like, do LeVert and Brogdon.
It's a Carlisle team. They have talent, and they generally, historically, their line is set too low historically. They're 63% of the time they go over. It's like, because their line is...
Do I think the Pacers are going to win 50 games? No. So by the way, their line, so it's 42 and up if you want to go over, 43 negative if you want to go under on them.
And so
I'm overplay on them. I don't think they're going to win the division because the Bucks are very good and the Bucks have a very high ceiling. I don't think they're going to win the Eastern Conference. conference, obviously, I don't think Duarte is going to win Rookie of the Year, but I think that they're going to, I think, overplay.
Yeah, overplay. I don't, no, we don't like the division in the Central.
No, and so the funny thing for me is, like, there are ways that I can see this Pacers season going south, for sure. Like, I mean, they have some talent that doesn't fit perfectly. They've already had some chemistry stuff, but, like, they'll be healthier. It's almost hard for them to be less healthy than they were last year, and they're...
We've seen Carlisle teams with less talent be better than this.
Yes, we have. So yeah, I'm very positive on them. Now, I don't think the Pacers are going to, like, win 55 games and be, like, a top seed and all of that, but I think they're a playoff team. And, like,
if you had to bet on a better record, would you take the Pacers or the Knicks?
Pacers. But I'm overplay on both of them. I think they're both over 500.
Yeah,
teams.
But the Pacers have significantly easier schedule.
They do, and the Pacers, like, I think I said Pacers too quickly. I think I am Pacers, but I think it's more of a close call than I said. I want to indicate that it is a close call. I do think the Pacers' talent is better.
Yeah. I do think that they're going to be, like, in the 4-5-6 kind of race. We're getting into
maybe 5-6-7 this year because the top is a little bit strong, but yeah, in that mix. Let's get to another team that might be in that mix, the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks went 41-31, just like the Knicks did, and they had a slightly worse point differential. They had the differential of go to 82-game season of a 47-win team, and so Vegas thinks, you know, puts the line pretty similar. It's 47.5 either way, so 47 and under if you want to go under, 48 and over if you want to go over. And I think an important place to start with this is health. So last year, Trae Young played 63 games, so he missed fewer than 10. Herter played. Capella, actually, even though he missed the beginning of the year, he played plenty, but, like, Hunter missed a ton of time. Bogdanovich missed a ton of time. Gallinari always misses time, but he also missed time.
But Hunter was addition by subtraction.
I like Bogdanovich.
Hunter, not Bogdanovich.
Oh, Hunter. No, I like Hunter too.
Hunter, I'm lukewarm on. He's flashy and can be I think he's
coming on. I think he'll do well. And also, like, they had Rondo for the first half of the year. He was terrible for them. They added Lou Williams, who was much better for them. And now they still have Lou Williams. So
yeah, the DraftKings love Sharif Cooper.
Yeah, I don't think he's. I think Cooper's, like, I like his passing. Like, he impressed me seeing him in person in Summer League. But I don't think he's so small and everything. Like,
he's IT4 with better pass.
But the thing that I like about Cooper's situation, the difference there is that he, like Jalen Johnson, who I actually really like, if he's good enough to play, he'll play. If he's not good enough to play, they have other guys who can get those minutes who are good. Like, so the Hawks don't need anything from Cooper and Johnson, but if they get something, great.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think this is an incredibly well set line. Like, this line is
perfect. It's like 47, it was last year, line is 47.5. and basically, Darko thinks it's 47. I'm over on this team, but I'm a fade. I'm staying away from it.
Yeah, I'm more confident in the fade.
There are better bets for this team. We'll talk about
it. I'm more confident in the fade than I am in the over, but I'm an over fade as well. I think that, so, I mean, what are the, I like Trae Young. I don't think it's going to be an MVP year for him. I think this is going to be more of an all NBA year for him. Also, we'll see how the rule changes affect it. Like, I think some people are probably overstating how this is going to work because Trae Young has a lot of other game, but, you know, the free throw drawing was a big part of his insane efficiency last year.
They made a point of emphasis, but I we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, we will. I think a lot of that, not all of it is going to stick, but I think a lot of it is going to stick just because of the way the league talked about it, and they understand in this way, but not in others, that it's an entertainment product. I think Trae Young, so it's 21-1 for him to win MVP. I don't think he's going to do it, so I wouldn't recommend that. But so when you were talking about interesting odds, are you meaning their division odds?
Yeah, I was looking at it. I thought it was going to be better. It's like +130.
So basically, it's will they finish with a better record than the Heat and potentially the Hornets or Wizards if things go really well?
Yeah, I think the division is the bet. I think you bet the Hawks to win the division. I think Hawks +130. Given that we're projecting at 47.5, and Darko's projecting the Heat, we'll talk about what Darko.
Here's what I'll say with the Hawks: don't bet anything. Like, it's all too well set for me.
I like Hawks +130 to win the Southeast. I think it's
plausible. Like, I like that the best. I will say that I like it the best.
I think it's a good bet. I mean, I think I'm gonna put Arturo likes.
Do I like betting them at 130 now or waiting until they lose a couple games and it gets like
150?
I'm gonna say Arturo likes. I like them winning division. I like division odds, but I'm gonna wait until I get a better price on it. I like division odds. I'd like to get it at better than +170. I think at some point this is going to be better than +170. Right. I think +130 isn't great. +175 means I'm basically at some point I'm going to cash out. And what I mean by that is, so if I get it at that price, I'm assuming at some point in the season, it'll get to the point where I can basically either like, I can trade it in or just basically take, I assume I'm going to get it at the end of the season, right?
Okay.
So you can basically like, the books will give you the option of basically, they'll buy it back for at a lower odd if it gets, and I think that it's just like, I think the price on that, I'm paying, like right now I'm paying a surcharge if I buy it at 30, right? And I think that like, I think I'll get it at a better price. So lose a couple games. That's just what's gonna happen. But yeah, I don't like their MVP odds. I don't like any of the rookie year odds. Let's talk about the Celtics.
Yeah, so the Celtics are fascinating. They had a really rough year last year, COVID, injuries, everything else. And, they ended last year with a 36-36 .500 record. But even then they underperformed their point differential. They had the differential of a 45 win team. We go over 82 games. They
had a bunch of injuries.
They had a bunch of injuries. They also, and then in the offseason, they swapped Kemba Walker for the triumphant return of Al Horford. They brought in Josh Richardson. They brought in Dennis Schroeder. They lost Evan Fournier. So it's like a weird little turnaround. They also swapped their coach to become their general manager and brought in Ime Udoka, who we'll have to see how that works out. So, like, Boston, the line is 47.5, just like it was for the Hawks. So 48 and over if you want to go over, 47 and under if you want to go under. And sort of similar to the Hawks for me, I think the Celtics are better than this, but I'm not confident enough to play it.
So basically, we're using Basketball Monster in the projection. They have a lot of Dennis Schroeder, and that's not a good one.
I think the nice thing for them with Schroeder is if he's not doing well, they have other options. Like, they don't need a lot of Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, but honestly, to me, is he the fourth best guard on this team?
Well, how are we defining guard? Are we counting Jalen as a guard? Jalen Brown?
Yeah, so Jalen, Smart, Pritchard, and then Schroeder.
And if we're counting, I think Richardson is better. So, Josh Richardson. So, I would say.
Yeah, he might be. So it's like, he's either fourth or fifth on that. Like, and he should play, like, I think PP should get, like, minutes ahead of him, right? So I think Peyton Pritchard would probably get minutes ahead of Schroeder.
I think it depends on what lineups you're using and all that, but like I think Schroeder's more talented than Pritchard, but there are times that Pritchard is the better option because he's less combustible.
Yeah, nobody's ever blown the bag like I can't believe the Lakers are going to pay him like $80 million. Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, we'll see if that offer, whether that offer was actually on the table.
So the trick on this team is like, so you want Schroeder to play less than BBM is projecting it, and you want Robert Williams to play more, right? I think the more Robert Williams plays, the better off you're going to be. If this is going to improve with Nesmith and some growth, then yeah, this team has some upside. I do think that the line is set properly.
I agree.
Because again, it's the division's tough, so I could see them winning 50 games easier if they were in a softer division, but in this one particular one where everyone's just gonna care, unless the Sixers just fall apart, could I see them winning 52 games? Yeah. I mean, if Tatum takes a super leap and they have good health and...
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. So 2 years ago, they were actually kind of a better team than that. I mean, it was a shortened, they were 48-24, but that was a 72 game season.
They had Hayward, healthy Kemba, more or less.
But they didn't have Horford, so I mean, that's a swap, and I think they had some.
But this is old Ford. This is not like the, I mean, like, I like Al, but Al's not the guy he was 2-3 years ago.
But so I mean, like, but neither are Tatum and Brown. Like, they're much better than they were.
Not as good or as deep as the team 2 years ago yet. They might be.
Oh, I would agree, but that team, team had the differential of a 58 win team. Like, they can be worse. And again, the question is, can they win 52? I think the answer is yes. I don't expect them to, but they can.
I kind of feel like 47 is the magic number. I'm kind of under and I'm kind of fade.
Okay. I'm over fade, but I think we're very close. It's just that, you know, this is such a well set line.
Well, the problem is, like, again, if I thought the Celtics are going to play the guys I think they should play, I'd go over fade, but I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to play, it's going to take them a while to get to where they need to get, right? I don't know Udoka enough to make the guess. If Brad's making the call as a GM, then they're going to play the wrong guys because this is just who Brad is. Brad will play too much Schroeder on the team.
And eventually they'll figure out that they should be playing him and they should be moving more toward Pritchard and Nesmith and Time Lord. And those are the guys that we need to kind of grow and get in there. And I mean, they kind of like banked in. Like the one thing I did like Stevens did is he locked in a bunch of contracts. So that this team is pretty well set to like make a move for one more guy and improve themselves. So I do think that's the young team that's going to improve. I do think the problem is, like, one, it's a rough division, and two, I think it's going to take them a bit to get to their optimal rotation, right? So this is why I'm under Thing. And also, I mean, like, if, you know, Vadoka comes out and he's, like, a great coach from the start, and he's an improvement on offense from Brad.
And the guys buy in, and, like...
Yeah, the problem with Brad was a good defensive coach, but he was a bad offensive coach.
Yeah,
I mean, he was good out of bounds, but he wasn't great on like regular offense. And he's not a guy who like worked the refs or worked the game style necessarily as aggressive as he should. Like Spoelstra does it, Nurse does it, Pop does it, but like Brad was like, no, he's too polite. He's like, no, you know, just hopefully the good things will happen. But he was never aggressive about pursuing kind of like, you know, if they're calling fouls or like they like being a little bit working the refs and getting them to the right side. And that was a weakness. I want to see if I get a bit more fire and I get a bit more improvement here. But again, I don't know. It's an unknown quantity. Udoka's like well liked, but I don't know how he's going to be in the head chair.
Right? So and for them, I don't particularly like to Tatum. It's 33-1 for him MVP. Like I like Tatum, but I don't think that's too big a leap. Like we don't see guys really come out of nowhere.
Hasn't he top five of the MVP? Hasn't he been the top five of the MVP or not yet?
I don't think he has yet.
I think it's interesting. I actually think it's interesting because it might be the year he finishes second, right?
Okay, so Tatum has never finished better than I think 10th in MVP.
Yeah, so no, nobody comes in from like nowhere like that.
I think it's 12th. I think he's never finished better than 12th.
Yeah, so what you would expect is him to come in like in the top. If he does really really well, he'll come in the top five. And like in essence, if he's coming, like if Tatum's winning the MVP, and the Celtics are the ones that base. That's my take on it.
Yeah, so go over instead of Tatum's MVP odds.
If you go in that direction, I mean, is 11-1 for them to win the division? They have to be 10 games better than that. Like, I mean, like for them to win the division, they'd have to win what 8 games more than they're over?
Something like that, yeah.
No, that's too rich, man. I don't like it. No. I think I'm good with not touching the Celtics because yeah. there's too much uncertainty, too much unknown. There's been a lot of roster turnover. Now there is a good team there. I do think this team is going to be better at the end of the season than they are at the beginning of the season. That's my take.
Yeah, right? I think that's totally fair.
It's just like we don't know exactly what they are at this point.
Yeah. So let's go to Miami. Pete finished last year with a 40-32 record. They outperformed, though. Interestingly, they outperformed their points differential pretty significantly, even though they then got knocked out of the playoffs by the Bucks. They, of course, had this very prominent offseason where they added Kyle Lowry and PJ Tucker, though it did cost them Dragic and Precious Chua, and they also lost Nunn and a couple other depth guys retained Duncan Robinson. And so I was wondering where this line was going to be set, and so it ended up being that the way Vegas treated it is actually that they're pretty close to where they were 2 years ago when they made the finals. The Heat had the differential of a 49-win team, and basically Vegas thinks they're going back there because if you want to go over, it's 49+, and if you want to go under, it's 49-.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable going under.
I'm an under fade because I believe in their defense, and like I think if their defense is top five, which actually incidentally,
do you believe in their health?
I believe in their health enough. Like they're gonna be, so I don't think they need all five of their guys to be healthy for them to win individual games, but I do think that, you know, if they do to win playoff games, of course. But like,
the thing is with the 49.5, that's the thing. The other thing is kind of interesting. Even though teams with Lowry generally go over, but Jesus Christ, 49.5.
It's a really ambitious line, and I think the point you're getting at with their depth is a real challenge. Like, I mean, so if we assume their starting five is Lowry, Jimmy, Duncan Robinson, PJ Tucker, Bam Adebayo. Let's say that's their starting five. Even though they got some veteran minimum guys that can help, like Dwayne Dedman, like their rotation is shallow. Tyler Hero is really the only other guy that could pick it up. I mean, maybe Max Strus or somebody else, but it's like there aren't a lot of established guys, and Oladipo, it sounds like he's gonna miss a lot of time figuring out all this stuff.
Somebody was calling him Vanilla Patty Mills, and I got offended that was too like harsh on Patty Mills, but
Who are you talking about there?
Streuser. Tyler Hero.
Oh, Tyler Hero. Oh, I think Mills is a better passer, but we'll see.
Mills is better. Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm comfortable going, I think I'm comfortable going the under. I'm trying to decide whether I'm going play or not.
Yeah, I'm under two. I'm just trying to figure out fade or play, and I think, so for me, so you think about teams that have like roughly a 49 win profile, like kind of the way that can look. And so last year, the Knicks were a little bit below that. The Lakers were around that. So actually, I think the Lakers are informative here.
Who do you think ends up with a better record? The Lakers, the Celtics, or the Heat?
The Celtics. I mean, I'm going over on the Celtics and under on the Heat. Like that's not a, I'm.
Yeah, but it's a 2-win difference.
Like, oh, it is a 2-win difference. That's true.
Yeah, if you think the Celtics are worse, like you're basically saying that you think it's under by, you think it's like 47 wins for this.
Yeah, I am. But I can see a path, but it's whether I play it. Like, so here's what I was saying with
the Lakers. Will they care about like finishing over? Like, will they care about winning 52?
Cause what's worrying me is, so like last year the Lakers were number 2 in defense and 23 in offense, and they roughly had the differential of a 48 win team. Any other defense, like Miami's defense might not be as good. I think they could be, but like it's very top heavy. Like their bench defense isn't going to be amazing, all that type of stuff, but they can be better than 21st on offense. I mean, I think they could easily be 15th. Maybe they could be a little bit better than that. Even though I'm not the biggest fan of a Jimmy Lowry, Bam kind of triumvirate in that sense, they have shooting like in a lot of the other spots and everything else. So, and I mean, PJ, so I think I'm going to feel stupid fading instead of playing, but I think I'm going to do it anyway because I believe in Spo. I think they have talent. And so I think they win 47-48. And like, I'm going to play the ones I'm more confident in. So I'm going to fade it, but I think you're going to play it and I'm going to regret not playing it.
Yeah, I'm going to play it. I mean, I think that there's just a clear line. Like again, the top of the East is so tough. Like I don't know that this team, how does this team win 50 games? Like I don't think they're going to, one, they're not going to try hard enough.
Well, it would be crushing the bottom 10 teams in the league. Like, I think that's the way that they would do it. But the problem is, I don't think their offense is combustible enough. Like, I think they'll have games where those teams have miserable nights.
The problem is they don't play in the West, which is weird, but it's true. Like even the bottom, like, you know, I mean, we have one cream puff, really, in the East, right? Maybe two, if we include Cleveland.
I think either Detroit or Cleveland is going to end up as one. We just don't know which.
Yeah. I mean, I think Detroit's, like, so in terms of, like, bad teams in the East, I think Orlando or Cleveland are it. I think Detroit and Cleveland and Washington are all going to play hard.
But like when Miami plays Charlotte, I think they'll stifle them pretty thoroughly. Now, but will they score enough? I think most nights they will, some nights they won't.
I think if Charlotte is full strength, Charlotte can basically run. Like the problem, like that, Charlotte does have a decent home court. So Charlotte's at full strength and there are going to be nights where Charlotte's going to catch Miami to play. Like because it's just, they're just going to play really fast, right? So Charlotte's going to play really fast and Miami might not want to spend the energy to, like, in the regular season game. That's kind of the thing. Right?
Yep.
So I think they're going to marshal their strength a little bit, and I don't know that they don't have the depth to go hard at 50. So I think under is a comfortable play.
Okay.
Because I don't think they're, basically they're not going to run, this is the anti-50 team. They're not going to play the minutes they need to play to get there, right? And I don't see why they would do that. This is kind of why I like Atlanta, because Atlanta will try to win that division, right? And I think Miami will win if it's there, but I don't know that's going to be their focus. I think their focus is going to be, can we make sure that everybody's healthy for the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
So they'll give Jimmy and Lowry time off.
And they don't have a good MVP candidate. Like I don't think Jimmy has that in him. No. They're going to rest him and everything
else. They're not going to play the
And generally, when we're picking a team's under, we're not going to like their division odds, their conference odds, or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, their division odds are crap. Their division odds are, God, I think there's like, it's like under money this week. Oh, it's plus, yeah, the division best is plus 110. That's no. Especially like, they're saying Miami's not even money. No. What are you talking? Are you insane? Like, did Atlanta die? No, they're not even money.
Okay, so let's jump to the Philadelphia.
This is why I said I wanted Atlanta at like over 175 because I want them at the field on Miami winning the division.
So let's go to the 76ers. Philly last year, they went 49-23. They had the differential of a 55 win team. Joel Embiid was my per minute MVP last year, and they didn't dramatically turn over the roster. Daryl Morey decided to keep Danny Green. That pretty much kept things solid. They didn't get anybody big in free agency. They got Drummond to replace Dwight Howard, but they lost George Hill, which I think will hurt them. Whether age-related regression or age-related stuff is going to help them is interesting. They have young guys, but will those young guys like Maxey and Shake Milton, will they play better enough to really get into Doc's rotation? Of course, we have the Ben Simmons question, but so Vegas sees them, like, Vegas sees that this as, interestingly to me, so like, I thought they were going to set the line at about even to what the Sixers were last year, and that I was going to be really torn. Instead, Vegas put the line down, so it's 51.5, so 52 and up for over, 51 and under for under, and that makes it a more interesting possibility for me in terms of making money here.
Basically, you're getting a Ben Simmons discount.
Yeah, and like,
so Philadelphia is significant. Like, Philadelphia with the current roster is significantly better than 51.5, right?
Yeah, because I mean, Joel Embiid missed 21 games last year in a shortened season. It's not
even if Joel Embiid misses 21 games like he did last season, you're still thinking that they're a significantly better team than 51.5. Like, if everybody else has come back with that continuity and whatnot, it's a good, like, this is solid.
Yeah, I mean, Curry played well for them last year. And it's not like, the other thing is that there weren't players on the Sixers last year that had super anomalously positive years. It wasn't like Tobias Harris shot the lights out or Danny Green.
Ben Simmons had a bad year.
Right, like, so for them, like, yeah, I agree with you. And so then the question becomes, well, okay, if they make a Simmons trade, which now seems more likely, or even he sits out regular season games, which I'm skeptical of, that is very, very rare in the NBA. And my instinct is that Daryl Morey is, if he trades Ben Simmons, which I now expect to happen, you know, at least by the All-Star break, but probably before that, I don't think a Ben Simmons trade is going to make them significantly worse. Like, I think they're going to get players who can help. They understand that Joel Embiid's time is now, mostly because of his injury stuff. Also, Embiid, this is age 27 season. Like, this could be his best year. So maybe it's CJ, maybe it's somebody else. Like, even if they take a step down, I don't know that, like, CJ is a worse player than Ben Simmons, but I don't know that he makes the Sixers that much worse, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think this is pretty, am I gonna go overplay again? I think it's over. I think we both agree it's over.
It's over.
So we're gonna go over. The question now is, do we play it?
I mean, it's always hard with Embiid because, like, I mean, I think he can miss 20 games and they can go over, but if he misses 30.
I kind of think generally Daryl Morey wins these trades, right? He doesn't necessarily, like, I don't expect Daryl, like, this is why I don't expect Daryl to make a trade with Golden State, because he's not winning that trade, right?
Well,
as much as Clutch is trying to tamper with the processing, like they did with Anthony Davis, there's no, like, Ben Simmons is on a 4-year deal. I think Daryl's, like, perfectly willing to just hold on the table until he gets the proper deal, right? So, functionally at this point, yeah, I think if a trade's gonna happen, it's gonna be better or he's gonna happen. I think he's gone, but I think, like, we're gonna be surprised at who they end up getting, right? So even if you remove Simmons for, like, you know, 75 cents on the dollar, right, and maybe some roster stuff, then, you know, they go from being, what, a, you know, right now they're, it's a pretty significant hole in the rotation, right? But
maybe they go from, like, a 57 win team to, like, a 54, 53, because you're not replacing him with nothing. You're replacing him with a guy who can play, just not as well.
It depends on who they, I mean, it's a bet on who you're getting. I think it's a play. You are getting a significant discount at this price, right? But I understand the reasons why they're getting, like, if they, you know, it's like setting a future line, basically. I still think they're better than this number. I would play it.
I'm going to fade it. I'm a little bit queasy. Nope, I'm going to play it. Fine. I think they're good. Overplay.
One interesting bit is that, Doc Rivers is the worst coach at beating overs in the entire, like, league. He's absolutely the worst coach. Like, somebody ran it. I can tell you what it was. So Owen Phillips, one of the guys on our chat, basically ran this. And Doc Rivers, over the last 16 season, has gone 5-11. His teams have gone 5-11 against the over under. Right. So maybe I'm gonna fade it. I think I'm gonna. You know what? I'm gonna switch. I'm gonna fade it. I think I'm gonna fade it. And because of the uncertainty, because
of what is their division odds? What are their division odds?
Through plus 350.
Ooh. Okay. So I would rather bet their division odds.
Yeah.
Because
let's do that. Let's fade.
Yeah. Let's fade it and
let's just play their division odds. I agree.
And then what are their making the NBA finals, like winning the conference?
Yeah, I don't like those, but we would both rather play Sixers
plus 350.
No, that's a better, like, that is basically, that 350 is making me, is that extra big is making me feel much better. Because getting even money versus getting 3.5 money is, 3.5 money is much better. Conference is 900 and finals is 800. The problem is I think both the Nets and the Bucks take on the series. I'm not betting on Rock Divers to win playoffs.
It's hard, not only the coaching element of it. I don't love Budenholzer in a playoff series, but
no coach ever has done less with more than Doc Rivers.
So yeah, I don't love that. I mean, if Embiid is just the best player on the planet, maybe it works, but generally speaking, best player on the planet who's a big man, it's just harder to make it work. And I don't think there, like, is there a conceptual Simmons trade that, makes them better? I don't know, like, maybe theoretically it involves they add a bunch of stuff and get Lillard, but I don't think that's gonna happen. Especially now with Simmons trying to push them early, like, I don't think Lillard's on the block right now. I don't think Bradley Beal is particularly on the block, though I think that's a trade the Wizards should consider, just because, I mean, Simmons is a talented player, and even though he's imperfect, like, yeah, okay.
Beal is interesting because if you had Beal, then you probably need to get another guard that can defend.
Yeah, you do. But I mean, that you can find that if that's what you need. Yeah. Like Beal.
I think we both rather would play 6'3". What do you think about Embiid for MVP?
So the line there is Embiid. So it's 10-1. I'd say maybe a small bet on it. The problem is you're basically just betting on health. Like, I mean, he was my permanent MVP last year, though a couple of guys that are serious considerations were unhealthy.
Danny, okay with?
I'm okay with it. I don't think it's not great. It's fine.
Yeah, both of those are better. Like, the ball with the over, like, I understand why the over-under is there, but here's the thing. Could they win? No, I don't think they can win the division in 52 games. So, basically, they win the division, but again, the added margin, right? So, I'm at 3 to 3.5 to 1. I'm basically making a similar bet. I'm basically at 3 to 5 to 1. I'm making a bet at them winning, like, 56 games.
Yeah.
And I'm basically saying that they get a good trade. And I said 56 game because that means that, like, Brooklyn has some injury issues and needs to rest guys, right? So they don't have 100%. Like, if Brooklyn is 100% health, Brooklyn's winning. But Brooklyn at 100% health with those two players, is maybe like a 10%, right?
Yeah.
Although I do like the Paul Millsap today. It looks like they might get LaMarcus Aldridge too, right? Which, again, these are marginal moves.
It's functional depth, but functional depth matters.
Yeah, functional depth in the season is going to matter. This is going to matter this particular season.
So let's go to the Bucks. The defending NBA champions do not have the highest over-under odds in the East, though it's pretty dang close. The Bucks last year, they had the differential of a 54-win team. They went 46-26. They actually underperformed their differential. That's why they were 46-26. Part of that was, I guess this isn't in differential. I mentioned I was going to bring this up. They had the second highest, meaning in a way bad defensively, opponent shooting percentage last year, which is from three, which is interesting. Like, they give up a ton of threes and opponents made them in the regular season, less so in the postseason. So Vegas set the line at a pretty similar number of 15.
I think because of the offseason, again, we're talking about pressing up. Like, in the postseason, they can basically mug people at 3-point line.
Also true.
And that, get cold. So basically, like, if you're already kind of, you can basically, like, bump contact on all these, like, threes, and they're not going to get foul calls.
And so the line here is 55. Basically, if you want to go over, it's 55 and up, and if you want to go under, it's 55 and lower. I think this is an incredibly well-set line. Not only, I think the Bucks, you know, if they were pushing as hard as they can, I think that they absolutely could get over this. They're a really good team, and if you were going to forget, they won 56 games in a shortened season 2 years ago. So, like, the pathway for them to win more than 55, like, that's a high number, but it is a doable number. They want 60.
They're gonna care,
but they're also shallower.
They want the better seed than.
But
than
the here's the thing for me, and I think this is after winning a championship, and, you know, I've been geographically close to a few teams that have won it in the last couple of years, is that I think they want it, but I also think that they're not going to push in terms of minutes per game necessarily. I think they might tone it a little bit down. So I think this is
an idea. The projection is with them not pushing minutes right now.
Okay, so
the projection. prediction basically has Giannis playing 33 minutes a night.
I will say this, I am definitely a fade here. I think that it's a really well set line. I think that there are a lot of good teams in the league. I think that, you know, going back to a little bit more balanced schedule will help the Bucks because it helps better teams. But I mean, Giannis played 33 minutes a game last year, so it's not like that's a crazy, I mean, that Budenholzer generally likes to do that.
I'm gonna go over play because I do think that they care about the wins. They care about like home court against the Nets. I think the number, the magic number is going to be 55-56 for home court. And I think that's, you know, having it be 54.5 makes me kind of think that they're going to care about it.
I'm going to go over fade. I mean, Giannis missed some time last year. He also missed about 10 games, 9-10 in the last couple of years. And then when the season when, I guess that was the second of his MVP years, he also missed 10. So if we assume that's a relatively decent proxy for where things are going to go, for where things are for Giannis. And I mean, he's incredible. I think that they, you know, I said this last time, I think their defense is better than the numbers on it looked last year when they were 10th. I think they're better than that. I think the offense will be probably around in line with that, with where they were last year. MVP odds, Giannis is at 8.5 to 1. I think that's a pretty good number. I think that's about, like, you know, I think his chances of winning the MVP are 10-15%, so that's probably about right.
8.5 is a good number for
It's him. A good number. This is such a weird MVP year, and there won't be as much fatigue, and he was the best player in the playoffs last year, so maybe there's like the, oh, well, like it's weird because he won two MVPs before that, but he didn't win last year, and I think there can be some recency in that, and so it's like, I don't think there'll be fatigue on it.
I think his MVP odds are good. I think the conference odds are 425, and I think the finals odds, the championship odds plus 900 is probably the best value for the championship. I
disagree. And the reason why is because I think not only they did get a little bit fortunate in terms of injuries, but also like they didn't run into teams that challenged Budenholzer in the way that other teams will. Like, you know, if we're closer to full strength with some of these top teams in the East next year and the West in the finals, like, I don't think they're winning the title. I think they're like the...
No, so I spent a lot of time on this, and like, Bud, let's give him credit. He figured out the rotations. Giannis didn't really play...
I mean, he figured out the rotations in part because they just didn't play teams that were whole. Like, I mean, think about how long it took them to figure things out against the Hawks.
Yeah, but once they figured out the rotations, they started going with Giannis like 40, 45 minutes, and Drew and Middleton. Once he figured that out, they were crushing teams left and right. And that's kind of... So the assumption for me is, one, they've already been there, and two, they know what they need to do to win. So to me, functionally, it's down to whoever wins the Bucks Nets series. Whoever wins the Bucks Nets series should basically be like even like whoever comes out of the East should be.
They'll have an over 50% chance of winning. I agree.
They should be an 80% favorite in the finals.
I wouldn't go that far, but they should be.
I would. There isn't a team in the West that can hang with them. There isn't a team in the, like none of the teams in the West. Like, and I'm basically the other way, but I don't think any of the teams in the West can hang with the Bucks or the Nets in the finals. Any of those teams are healthy finals. They can't handle it, right? They don't have the talent. And maybe one of them makes the leap, but right now I don't believe that's the case, right? Because Denver isn't whole. I don't think the Suns aren't going to be, like, some of their guys are improving, some of their guys are getting worse, so maybe if one of their guys improves enough, maybe you get there, but like, the Nets and the Bucks are playing on different levels. And, the Nets, like, the Bucks were better than everybody else, but I think the Nets were probably better than the Bucks if they hadn't got hurt, right? Which is kind of consider because, like, the Bucks laid out a pasting against a team that really didn't look like the best team in the West. And to me, I mean, the worst I would make the odds for the Bucks to win the titles are like 30%. And, like, maybe 30%
wow. You're more optimistic than I am.
I'm like 30% to the Bucks, 30% to the Nets, maybe 5% to the Sixers, and then 45% to the field.
We're about to go there. I'll say my Nets stuff in a second.
So I'm gonna say, like, so you like Giannis to win the MVP, like, you like it.
It's fine. I wouldn't say it's an amazing bet, but it's a reasonable one.
I love the Bucks at 9-1 to win the title. I think that's historically the defending champion at 9-1, and the team this young will basically bring everybody back. Yeah, it's sort of like that's a great bet.
Well, I would say the Bucks are less old than young. I mean, Giannis Let me run through their basketball reference ages for the coming season. So Giannis, this will be his age 27, Middleton 30, Drew 31, Brooke Lopez 33, DiVincenzo 25, and we'll see how healthy he is. Connaughton 29, like they lost PJ Tucker. I'm a little bit more pessimistic on the, but not dramatically. So let's get though to the Brooklyn Nets.
So Giannis at what was it, 10.5 to 1?
No, it's 8.5 to 1, which is why if it was 10 to 1, I would be more enthusiastic.
10.5 to 1, Danny, and I love their, it's 9 to 1 for the title. It's just 9 to 1 to win the title. Just love it. It's probably my favorite. It's my favorite. It's my favorite title on the board. I mean, I'm fairly confident after what I saw from Dennis. They're gonna win. They're gonna hang another banner. Right? I feel confident they're gonna hang at least one more. And they're, I mean, again, I just think that whoever wins it, whatever, I think it's gonna come down to the Nets and Bucks again. And whoever wins that series is gonna win the title. And maybe I'll change my mind during the season, but I don't see it from the field at this point. Like, Luka doesn't have enough things around him. Phoenix has weaknesses, and we'll talk about it later. Kawhi's missing. But let's go to the Nets.
Let's go to the Nets. And so, I mean, don't necessarily need to delve too much into last year because they had basically never had the big three together. But even then, they still had the differential of a 55-win team. They went 48-24 overall. They were very close to winning the series against the Bucks and overall making it despite Harden being very limited, Kyrie being out. Vegas is optimistic. That's why they're the highest over-under in the entire East. It's 55.5 either way. So that means 56 and over if you want to go over and 55 and under if you want to go under. I really like the Nets. I think that they are a phenomenally talented team. I think that they have potentially one of the best offenses of all time and their defense is good enough. I am an overplay.
Yeah, I think we're both on overplay. They keep adding these pieces to the edges of the rotation. Just added Paul Millsap today. And, I mean, that's a significant add in the sense of, like, you know, Millsap's not gonna play, you know, 40 minutes a night, but he's gonna play 20 minutes on the edges. And that's like 20 quality minutes on the edges.
Yeah.
And they keep adding kind of like these pieces. And I add, like, the other thing is, like, you never felt like the Nets basically play like a professional basketball team every night. They did as much as humanly possible to get there. And again, they came within like a toe of probably winning the title, right? Even with Harden out and Kyrie out.
With one of the three.
It's silly. I mean, like, if they're fully healthy, it's down to a fist fight between them and the Bucks. I think the difference, and I'm probably stronger on the Bucks than you are probably, is that basically, I think that, like, this year the Bucks kind of figured out what they needed to do to get better, right? So that is the key difference for me, between, like, last year's projection and this year's projection. Are you there, Danny?
I am.
Sorry, it's like I lost power for a second, so I'm like, make sure it comes back real quick. But again, the trick on this is I do think that both these teams, the Bucks and the Nets, are going to be better in a playoff series than they were when they met this year. Now, if the Nets are fully healthy, I'm still of the opinion that they should have the edge on the Bucks, right? And I think Otto agrees with me. Now, do I believe it's a high chance that the Nets are not going to be fully healthy? Yeah, probably. You know, I mean, I'm aware of, you know, I've had Kyrie on my team on the Celtics, and I'm aware that, like, you know, there are significant injury concerns on this team. I do think that there's a probability some of these guys won't necessarily be there. I think the Bucks are probably a little bit more robust. And so I would probably say that it's a slight edge to them, right? So when this is what I was saying, like, before, though, I think it's kind of like 30-30 between these two teams, and then like maybe 5 for the Sixers, and then the you know, 35 for the Heat. So I do think that, like, if you give me the Bucks and the Nets, I expect one of these two teams to win the title. And I do think both of them will care about home court because the margin between these two teams is very, very tight, right? So both these teams would rather play 4 games at home in a 7-game series against each other, right? I don't think they care about anybody else. right?
Well, and here's the other thing for me with the Nets. It's like, I don't think they need to be healthy, fully healthy to win 55 games. Like, I just don't. I think they
We know they don't need to be fully healthy to win 55
games. Yeah, and so.
We know this from last year. They don't need to be fully healthy.
Well, and so, okay, so there are a couple other interesting numbers for Brooklyn. So Durant for MVP is 7.5 to 1. I don't love that because, I mean, I think Durant's incredible, but because if they're healthy, the credit will go multiple ways.
There's too many mouths to feed.
Yeah, like Harden being 25 to 1, I think is actually probably too low. Too weak. I think that he has a better chance, but I'm not, like, he's not in my top 5 MVP candidates this year just because he's also splitting the vote and everything else. For me, so then the other really interesting one based on what you have is, so Brooklyn, it's 1.1 to 1, bet 100 to win 110 for them to win the conference. And then it's 2.6 to 1 for them to win the title.
The finals bet is better.
To me, the Bucks are better than a 50% chance.
There's a reason why those final bets are better. It's because there's a public team sitting on the other side.
Yes. And so for me, I would say this is how much more I like the Nets than the Bucks. I like the Nets title odds better than the Bucks, even though it's basically three times the size. Like, that's how much I believe in Brooklyn.
We both like Nets plus 260.
Yeah. I really like Nets plus 260.
I just said, I think that both these teams are better than 60% to win the title. So if I'm sitting at plus 900.
If they make the finals, yeah.
I think that they're 60% from now to win, like, the odds are.
Well, you can't have two teams that are 60% to win the title because then.
I think both these teams together.
Like, oh, I think it's, I think odds. It's. I think it's over 70. Right.
So, and I'm saying if this is what I think, then me sitting there with action at 260 and at 900 means that basically I'm making money, right?
Yeah, that's another way to think about it. Sure.
And this is when you're taking these future bets, you're in essence taking almost a portfolio and saying, like, okay, what action do I want to be sitting on? And here's the reason why. And because I'm sitting at Nets and Bucks, because I think that at those odds, both these bets are winning money against the field, right?
Yeah.
This is my thought on that. I think both of these are mispriced. And again, the reason for that is because there's a public team on the other side, which we'll talk about when we talk about the West.
Yeah.
Anything else you want us to mention about the East before we go?
No, I think we're pretty well settled in the East. I think it's going to be a more fun conference this year than it's been in a while. I think it's going to be really interesting.
It's the first time in a very long time where arguably the three best teams in the league play in the East.
Yeah, even just like through the middle of the playoffs, and like I think the Pacers, Hawks, and Celtics are all, and Heat are all good teams. Like there's balance in it now. I think the bottom of the playoff picture is actually a little bit overrated, mostly because I think the Bulls are not as strong. The Knicks, I think, are totally fine. But it's going to be interesting. And I think that some of that is people forgetting how good the West is, but we'll get into that later. So thank you so much for coming on.
Pleasure to be on.
Thanks again to Arturo Galletti for taking the time to come on. He is the CTO of Sports Grid Data Science. You can also follow him on Twitter at American Numbers, AmericanNumbers. Love having him on, and he's going to be on really soon because we already recorded the West over-unders. That will be, I think I'll release that early next week. I want to give each of them time to breathe. I also have to do all the timestamps and all the editing, so that's going to take some time. But love having him on, and actually, I'm ahead of the game for a deliberate reason. I'm getting, I think some of you know, I'm getting married and going on my honeymoon late in the off season. So I'm pre-recording a lot of the other division podcasts. I already have one in the can, and then I'm hoping to do everything before I leave so I don't have to do anything when I'm gone, which would be great. So those will be coming out. That does mean they'll be a little bit less time sensitive, but I mean, most of the big stuff other than potentially a Ben Simmons trade is already done, and the Atlantic already handled with Jared Weiss and Jared Dubin, so you can listen to that. It's a little bit imperfect, but it's the best that I can do. And if you want to support the show, there are a lot of different ways you can do it. You can subscribe, download every episode. That's great for Real GM Radio because it's never going to come out on a specific day of the week. I don't have the capacity to do that. It's my schedule, guest schedule, and everything else. And whatever podcast player you're using, that helps Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever, can also help other people find the show, whether that's leaving a rating and a review in the podcast player you're choosing, or we're mouth saying, hey, this episode's really great, whether it's on social media or in person to one of your friends or text chain or whatever. Be safe. All that is much appreciated. You can also check out my other work. Nate and I are still doing Dunked On. We did the massive, I believe all of the episodes now, maybe all but one of our Summer League review are out now. Lots of great substance there. And then we'll have other stuff throughout the offseason. And then he'll also do those team by team previews with people that aren't me. And that'll be a lot of fun too. So you can check all that out, Dunked On Prime. And then we do still one free episode a week for Dunked On as the public episode. And then my writing is at The Athletic, working on a couple different projects. Hopefully we'll be out in the nearest term. We'll see if those can come out. So lots of different stuff coming on. And if you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com is the way to get it to me. If you take the time to write it, I will take the time to read it. That is a promise. I do not promise to respond. I try to. I admit that I'm not the greatest at it, but I try to. But I do read it. That's very important to me. I don't want you to waste your time. And I consider it, you know, it's helped me find new guests. It's helped me change things about the show. I really do appreciate all of that stuff. And I think that's all for now. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.